This is episode 405. Have you injured yourself recently? Maybe you've done so many injuries you can't even count them. Or you're likely to throw your back out doing the washing or even sneezing. If that's you, then keep listening, because on today's episode, we talk with a fitness expert that has had many injuries in her sport and personal training career and has now become passionate about creating injury-free workouts that are safe so you can learn to trust your body again in and out of the gym, or Pilates, or yoga, or wherever you want to move your body. We also go deep on the idea that too much choice and too much access to apps, gyms, food, resources, dopamine, etc., is doing the opposite of helping those of us in the Western world, and maybe it's actually debilitating us, be it imposter syndrome, analysis paralysis, or too much trauma, or even a lack of trauma. Whatever it is, why is it that so many of us aren't helping ourselves do good, great, and healthy things? This became a much deeper conversation than you might expect from the title, and I think you'll get a lot out of it. So let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Here we are for another episode of your favorite podcast, I hope. This year, it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. Links for exploring how and what we do inside our programs are down in the show notes or the caption below. Okay, so today we've got Lisa Ferguson here on the show, who is a personal trainer with more than 20 years experience in the health and fitness industry, from owning gyms and being Young Business Person of the Year to now helping those of us with injuries and a bit too much age to move our bodies in a way that means we don't risk hurting ourselves yet again, and thus ending up on the couch gaining weight for another 6 months as we recover. And not only that, the reason I know Lisa is because she actually went all in on being a one-on-one private client of mine in the Mind Body Nourishment program. And she's since graduated into our membership program called the Consistency Club. So I know Lisa well, and I'm rapt that you're here, Lisa. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Maddie. This is like hashtag podcast goals for me. So appreciate you. Thank you.
Oh, you are so welcome. It's so nice to have somebody on that I know really, really well. And because usually the people that I have conversations with are sort of, we've exchanged one or two emails, or our assistants have exchanged emails, and then we get on and it's this brief thing. But it's like, it feels like I'm hanging out with an old friend right now.
I feel like that could be both awesome and also very dangerous at the same time. We'll err on the side of awesome. Let's stick with awesome for today. Yes.
And what that means is, for anybody listening, settle in for the next 4.5 hours.
No, maybe a little bit. Yes, actually.
So moving our bodies through time and space is your jam. And so, there's lots of places that we can start this conversation. And a lot of the content around fitness is obviously about losing weight, getting abs, getting jacked, looking, you know, Instagram perfect, so to speak. But I'm going to actually start somewhere else as I sit here in this conversation with a moon boot on and say, what is the main reason people get injured during exercise?
I was going to ask how your sex on legs moon boots was going for you, but yes, fun.
Yeah, not amazingly.
Not amazingly. Okay. That's okay. Maybe we can have this conversation and apply it directly to you, and you can be an awesome case study as to be like, yeah, this concept's amazing. We love it. It's so great. As the slightly older, slightly more injured, slightly sitting on the couch for 6 months type of person that you just alluded to in the intro, Maddie's like, don't ask me how I know these things.
Yeah, guilty. I'm an injury legend.
Oh, but yes, like it's, yeah. And I'm not proud to say, but at 37 years young, so am I. And not even so am I right now, but so am I since I was 20. And a big reason that my journey has evolved to this space, firstly, isn't a mistake. We're always exactly where we're meant to be, or that's what I tell myself to make myself feel better about life when it gets a little bit tough. But I blew my back out in the gym when I was 20. And had a pretty significant back injury, which has quote unquote plagued me since. I wouldn't say that it stopped me it has stopped me playing some really high level sports, which I would have loved to otherwise go on to, but I've been able to work with it. I still enjoy a really good, healthy, fit, healthy, strong quality of life. And I just work with it. I just work with it because that's life. And it's interesting. And thank you for your question around why people generally get injured. When I was a young PT back in the day, when I was a young PT and we're at school and one of the questions that they insisted that we ask, and I was, you know, young and full of ego and, you know, the biggest bitch in the gym and could lift all the things and before, you know, things got too out of hand. They said, it's really important to ask your clients the question, are you concerned with the safety of exercise? And I was, at the time, I was like, why would you be worried with the safety of exercise? Exercise is fine. It's a controlled environment. It's a gym. We're a personal trainer. We're here together. Fast forward 15, 20 years. And now my number one concern with going into like a new CrossFit box or an F45 or a new gym or a class or something where I'm not in total control of it, my number one concern is the safety of this exercise. And am I going to be required and judged if I adjust things that are going to be safer for me to do in my body or not? And I feel like that one of the reasons that people get injured, whether it be in life, in the gym, whatever, is not necessarily because we're not thinking about safety, but certainly for me, being a little bit older now, going into things that we used to do, that we used to be a gun at and going, oh, cool. So I used to be an A-grade netballer and I'm going to go for those shots. I'm going to go for those balls that when I was 16, I would fly and get and it'd be amazing. And now suddenly as a 37-year-old, I can't. Something about you going to have a football career again this year screams a similar sort of situation, Maddie, with that.
Yeah.
I think that there's some aspect around that as well. Maybe going back into something that we once used to be amazing at, but not so much, and our brain can get there, but our body can't. But also, like, not even considering the safety of exercise, or certainly our fitness professionals or the people that are helping us move need to be considering what is safe, not period, but for this person. Like, what's accessible mm-hmm. for this person in their body today? What's functional for them today? Because last week I could have gone and picked up 100 kilo deadlift, no worries. This week, absolutely out of the question. And so I think I don't want to be like one of these, oh no, the safety of exercise, rah, rah, boring. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be that at all. But I think if we can be, as fitness professionals and as people are helping, and as people who are helping people be fit, healthy and strong for a lifetime, and that really being the number one reason why we're here, it's like, I think people aren't going to lean in and they're not going to go all in if they don't feel safe. And sometimes people don't know what safe is and what safe isn't. So I think sometimes for us as professionals, it's really important to create those parameters and set up that framework and help people understand what safety is and what safety isn't, and the myriad of contexts in which safety applies, in order to have people having a good movement experience that's making them feel better than when they got here.
Yeah, I really like that. I think the conundrum happens, and it's funny because you mentioned my return to football, and yeah, it's like the body just isn't what it used to be. And I know a lot of people listening are like, these two are in their 30s. What have they got to whinge about? But, you know, I feel just as disabled as anybody limping around with my broken foot at the moment, right? And so I guess the thing that came up to in my mind as you were talking there is the best gym that I've ever been in was all the personal trainers were physiotherapists. And the reason that that was useful was because they understood the body well enough to know which lifts and moves and weights were going to be challenging or difficult or potentially dangerous, you know, because they understand the mechanics of the body in such a different way other than good form to lift the weight. And I know we've got this massive spectrum with personal trainers now where you can be an exercise physiologist or physiotherapist all the way down to I did a 6-week course and now I'm a personal trainer. And so, you know, it's this sort of balance between how do we enter a space that's safe, but also how do we trust that the person giving us the advice understands the body well enough so that we don't hurt ourselves.
Yeah, I am very opinionated about this, and so I need to make sure that I am offering a grounded and collaborative approach.
So diplomatic.
To answering this question.
So safe.
Yeah. I'm so safe and so diplomatic, and I'm going to preframe with that. And now I'm going to ask for permission and apologize after the fact that I'm just going to be really polarizing for a sec. If I could give anyone a piece of advice, if you're worried about the safety of exercise and your personal trainer or fitness professional isn't asking you if you are concerned about the safety of exercise, get a new personal trainer, get a new fitness professional. Mm-hmm. I feel like that this should be a mandatory question that's asked. And it's interesting that you talk about as well, like us young whippersnappers in our 30s that are all injured. But it's interesting, my chiropractor constantly says to me, Lisa, you have the spine of an 85-year-old, and the only reason that you are not in a wheelchair and that you are not on some kind of disability pension in permanent pain relief is because you keep moving your body.
Yeah, wow. That's amazing.
Because when you have been an athlete, when you have been a semi-professional athlete for 20 years, the amount of load that you put through your body, the volume of that, like, you know, we can sometimes do in 20 years what some people don't even do in a lifetime, which is why, you know, the Brownlows are on the other night and I saw Angus Brasher up there giving the retiring class of 2024 address. And I just think, oh man, these guys are literally in their early 30s. They're the same age as us, Maddie. And I'm like, they have taken so much load through their bodies. They're professional athletes. And so now for them, in order to be able to keep moving long term, in order to be able to not only keep moving but be pain free, the priority of their movement needs to be around safety. And I'm not talking about, oh, is it safe? Is it, well, like, yes, safe is important, but there's also an acronym that I apply to the letters SAFE, and we can talk about that in a sec. But it's like, for the season of my life that I am in now, whether I want to be able to do this or not, can I, should I, will I, am I going to feel better as a result of this, or is it just going to leave me frustrated and more injured? And I don't know if anyone's been in chronic pain before, but it's not very good for your quality of life.
I know somebody that works at the AFLW. He's an osteo. And so we're talking women's football here in Australia. And going further sort of into that idea of making sure that the person you're working with understands safety or wants to ask you if you feel safe is maybe even a level of knowledge of people that don't necessarily realize what is and isn't safe. Because what he was telling me is that there's a very clear pattern on when women injure themselves based on their period, which is a whole nother layer of knowledge about safe movement, right?
Absolutely. Huge. And this might be a little bit TMI, but I am just about ready to move into the menstruation part of my cycle. And in the gym yesterday, I noticed it. It makes a massive difference. It's everything hurts a little bit more. The hormones in your body affect, I feel like they affect the how your joints move. And in the study that I've done around doula studies, definitely certain different types of hormones that are released into our body at certain times of our pregnancy and when we're ready to give birth, but also like those microcycles that we have as women monthly, it does affect the way that your hips and your joints and your bones and your muscles and those type of things move. Sometimes we get hyperflexibility, which can be a little bit of a challenge at time as well. Even the fact that, you know, if we're doing movements which we need to be really switched on, turned on, tuned in, we need to be there in order to do it effectively and safely, like, you know, sometimes depending on in where you in your cycle you are, your coordination can go out, your fine motor skills can be a little bit less lacking. And if we're working in the realm of percentages here, it's like, well, should we really be going for a 1RM front squat today or not? Like, and that's what I was alluding to at the start as well. It's like, you know, what was safe for me this week isn't going to be safe for me next week and vice versa necessarily. And so meeting ourselves and giving ourselves permission to be where we're at, and also our fitness professionals meeting us and giving ourselves permission to be where we're at, because the most effective movement is the stuff that you're able to come back and keep doing consistently. Like if I go for a big lift today and blow myself out, even if I don't injure myself, but it was a crappy lift and I feel bad about myself because it wasn't a really good time of the month to be doing that and I'm beating myself up on it, or if I'm typically self-critical or something like that, I might not want to turn up for a week now or a month and be like, stuff it, if I can't be my best, I won't do it at all. I'm now going to go home and eat a packet of chips because if I can't do anything, I won't do anything and I might as well just throw it all in the bin. Like, which can be... that sounds dramatic and extreme, but at certain times of the month, that can be quite a logical and standard response to life.
Yeah. Well, I think as well, what you bring up there fundamentally is ego. And I think knowing myself as well, but also lots of people that you just described, is that we often think about physical movement and fitness in the context of elite sport, whether we realize it or not. And so we walk in being like, I've got to absolutely flog myself. I've got to win. I've got to lift heavier. I've got to push the limits. And all of that, especially as we get older, just becomes more and more dangerous.
Yeah. And if I can be so brash as to say, my ego is getting absolutely kicked in the balls lately.
You and I both.
And it's a bitter pill to swallow. Like, I grew up in a really sporting family where a lot of, like, you were acknowledged and praised based on the success that you were having in the sporting field, very much so. Like, mm-hmm. you know, my cousin Andrew was an amazing cricketer and golfer, and then my cousins Sally Ann and Simon were, like, incredible musicians and singers and, like, you know, the really good things. And so I'm like, I'm okay at some stuff. Like, I'm pretty unremarkable, but I can do some things. I'm like, oh, there's no one around here doing any gym things. I'm just going to go and be the biggest, awesomest, baddest, biggest lifted bitch in the gym and no one's going to get near me. And here I am and I've got something to prove here and rah, 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 and all these things. And that's fine until it's not. It's fine until, yeah, 10 years ago I could do X, Y, and Z and now I can't and I want to. And I was talking to a good friend of mine yesterday and I'm probably going to butcher it, but she said something on the lines of, she read a quote that said, you can want something for yourself, but if it's not for you, it's not for you. You can't want for it to be yours if it can't be, if that makes sense. It's, yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
I want to go and run a marathon tomorrow, but my body is not conditioned and it is not in the season which that would be adding value to my life or the lives of those around me. They're not going to want to hang out with me, guarantee it.
Yeah, I can relate to that a little bit. And it reminds me of, you know, say somebody that maybe grows up in school that wants to be a basketballer and they don't grow past 5'3". And they're sort of like, you know, you might want it all you like, but it's probably never going to happen. And it's, if it does, it's like extremely unlikely because you're just not built in a way that it is for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. I remember, it was a fair while ago now. I would have been maybe 31 or 32. And you play your best netball between 28 and 32. And it's typically, like, in my little realm of the universe, maybe not in elite circles, but in my little realm of the universe, they say between 28 and 32 when you're an amateur is key because you're mature enough now that you're not an absolute crazy person on the court if things don't go your way. You're pretty mature. But then it's that sweet spot between while you've got the netball brain before your body starts to break down. And I was 31 and I was trying to make this rep team in WA and I was in so much pain. I had this, I had a knee injury, which at that point had needed surgery for 5 years. But because I knew I was in the sweet spot and I knew that if I had to have a month or a year out to get my knee fixed, as an old person, there's no real coming back from that unless you're an absolute superstar because they're going to be investing their time into young kids that might be a bit raw, but they could get 10 years out of that kid, whereas for me they're only going to maybe get 1-2 tops. And so I was just going, no, that's all right. I'll just push through. And I will never forget it. Actually, a friend of mine was visiting from Queensland at the time and he went to watch a soccer game and I'm like, I've got to go to this rep. It's this rep trial. It's the last time I'm going to have a chance to do it. I know it for sure. And I couldn't even break for a center pass. I couldn't even receive a ball without stepping on because I was in so much pain. And for all of my wanting to make this team and for all of my wanting my body to see those balls and to make that drive and to know exactly where I wanted to go to make an impact, for all my wanting, I couldn't make it happen in that particular state because, you know, of this injury. And so, yeah, that's an example of where wanting something, I think, is all good and well, but. And not even being negative. Like, I think there's a lot as well around, oh, you know, you can do anything you put your mind to. But like you say, if you want to play NBA basketball and you grew to the size of my brother, who is 5'5", that's not going to happen. Unless you're Magic Johnson, which I think even he was taller than 5'5", was he? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think as well, maybe this opens a whole other realm of conversation, but the idea that, you know, and our generation, the millennials, were particularly raised with the idea that you can be anything. Now the cat's out of the bag that I'm having a kid. I don't plan to raise my kid with that idea. I don't think that's very supportive, because if it did anything to the millennial generation, it was make us feel like we were capable of anything and we half-assed fucking everything.
100%. That has been, and I'm so glad that you raised that, that has been so paralyzing and so challenging for me in the past 20 years. Like, it's, we're due to have our 20-year school reunion this weekend, but it's been cancelled because not enough people are wanting to go and hang out with the people that were really happy to get away from 20 years ago.
Fair enough.
And I finished high school in 2004. With no idea what I wanted to do with my life, because I was one of these ones that had pretty well a B-plus average across everything. So I wasn't outstanding at anything. I wasn't really terrible at anything. I was pretty good, like, at most things. And so then I'm like, well, I could do all of these things, but now I don't want to choose because I'm going to get FOMO because I like that just as much as that, just as much as that. And I'm just as capable in all of those things. So there's nothing that's really outstanding for me that's really calling me forward. I used to get jealous of my mate Anne. She knew that she wanted to be an architect from the time she was four, just about. And now she's one of the country's most successful architects. And judging for Aussie awards and all sorts of things, she's awesome. Shout out, Anne. And I'm like, well, I don't really know what I want to do. And I feel like 20 years on, I'm not any closer to knowing what I want to do. Like, there's nothing remarkable or huge or edgy or leading edge that's calling me forward. And it's like, well, is life really lived in that realm? Are we meant to be absolutely on the red line of something absolutely incredible and amazing, and all of these chats that we're going, you can do anything, be anything, you can, you know, make $200,000 in 5 minutes, you can, you know, jump on my 8-week challenge and lose 20 kilos in 5 seconds, just like A, B, and C did. Like, and yes, there are extremes to every rule, and there are people that are living at opposite ends of those, but just like a good old bell curve, where are we? Like, what are we doing? And I'm not saying settle for a mediocre life, but nature seeks balance by the very essence of nature. Like, if I drink a coffee like I did this morning only after my meat broth, which is going very well, by the way, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's an acidic substance that I'm putting into my body, but my body needs to be at a certain pH in order to be able to survive. So it's seeking balance. It's seeking to balance that acidic substance that I've put in, and it will, you know, shift and shimmy a little bit of alkalinity to get that pH at whatever it's meant to be. I can't remember. You're the science guy. But save me.
I think we're meant to be at 7.3.
7.3. Coffee is not 7.3. So anyway, that's just my really bad roundabout scenic route example of how I think we're meant to seek balance by nature, and whether we like it or not, we will. And so it's like, okay, well, if we're not meant to be living on the edges of the extreme, because firstly, you're a car guy. If you're sitting in a car and that car can go 250 kilometers an hour, 300 kilometers an hour, we're on the Autobahn in Germany, amazing, cool, incredible. But you're redlining that mofo, like, as hard as you can. You are driving that as hard as you can. It is on its edge. It is going. It has great capacity to go huge volumes of speed. How long can you do that for, though?
So picture this, right? Unlocking your potential, conquering emotional eating, and gaining insights directly from a health and nutrition expert such as myself. That's what we do inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group, which is currently free to join. If you've ever felt trapped by food challenges, struggled with maintaining a healthy lifestyle, or yearned for a community that understands the reasons why you've yo-yo dieted for years, then there's a new chapter waiting to be written. And this is your chance to start writing it by joining us all on Facebook Lives, on engaging posts that push you out of your comfort zone and into growth, and Q&A sessions with me. All of this works as a platform to begin changing your emotional eating problems for good. Oh, and also, as a special gift, you'll receive my transformative How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook. And that's also for free. I get it. Skepticism might linger. You might think, Maddie, I've heard these ads and I'm not sure. Well, at least a quarter of the members inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group have been paying clients of my emotional eating program at some point over the last 3 or 4 years. So if you're not sure, you can post in the group and ask to find out if I'm the real deal or not. It's totally up to you. To join us in the free Healthy Mums Collective and to end your emotional eating and feel good in your own skin and begin that journey, pop down to the show notes below, click the link and breeze through 3 simple entry questions. Join today and let's embark on a journey of growth and empowerment. The link is in the show notes below. Yeah. Yeah, it's you're going to burn yourself out, right? And I think I can relate so much to what you said about sort of being pretty good at a lot of things, but not necessarily super great at anything. And I can relate to the comment about your friend knowing exactly what she wanted to do from a young age. I have been completely jealous of those people. And I have memories and there's stories that my mum tells when I was about 5 or 6 or 7, and maybe regular podcast listeners will not be surprised about this story. But when other people would ask me under the age of 10 what I was going to be when I would grow up, I would just be like, just settle in for a moment because I'm going to work at McDonald's. I'm going to be a rock star. I'm going to be a mechanic. I'm going to be an engineer. I'm going to fly to the moon. Like, and I would just rattle off this list of like 20 things that I was going to do. And ironically, you know, as an adult, I've grown up to be someone that's got lots of skills. I can learn fast. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, oh, I guess what do I do now? There's no obvious winner. And the thing that I really want to do, like we talked about before, I'm not physically capable of because my body keeps falling apart. Because I, like most boys and a lot of people, I just wanted to be able to be a sports star. Because who doesn't want to live their childhood for an extra 20 years, right?
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And I see you in that. And so then suddenly we're fumbling around life, and it can become after a little while. I don't know about you, Maddie, if this is your experience, but you essentially just described me also. So thank you for that reflection. It can start to get a little bit discouraging. Like I'm 20 years in, I'm fumbling around. I still don't know. There's nothing remarkable about what I've done. Same sort of thing. Like I've got a list of stuff that I've done and that's okay. But, you know, I'm coming on the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. Oh, what massive, cool, incredible, rock solid thing have I done that's going to warrant people wanting to talk to me? Like, how am I going to be inspirational to the point of I overcame some kind of terrible big T trauma at some time in my life that made me the incredible person that I am today? Like, that absolutely is not me. And I just keep showing up every day. And I think that there's something really nuanced in what you said around when people ask us as kids what we're going to do. When I was in grade 7 in my yearbook, I think I said I wanted to be a preschool teacher. I could not think of anything worse in my life than pre-primary school children. Like, seriously, what was I thinking? But then really, really literal children like me, and most of us are super literal as children and as adults. Don't ask me how I know. When we're asking kids what we want to do, like I will hang on to an idea and be like, oh, I've said this now, and so my integrity in order to keep that intact means that I have to follow through with that because my word is important. This is what I'm going to do. I said that, maybe I should. Oh, but I don't know what to do, so I'll just do nothing. Otherwise, it's paralyzing. We either pigeonhole ourselves into something that we actually don't even want to do because it's not safe to change our mind, or we don't end up doing anything, going, oh, I can't show up anywhere because I'm not really sure. And so I think that slight switch around, instead of getting caught up on what we're going to do, like if there's a crisis, it's like, oh man, what am I going to do? That's the first thing. The first place we go to is what the actual am I going to do about that? But I think the key really gets to be, who am I going to be? Who am I going to be in life? And is who we are as human beings actually the most important thing, not necessarily what we're going to do? And do we actually have the focus a little bit skewed? What do you reckon?
Well, I think what's coming up in my mind is the idea that maybe a better question is for all the people listening that are like, yeah, I'm pretty good at a bunch of things, but you know, I'm relating to this conversation a lot, and I didn't have big T trauma. And that's the reason that this is called the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And that's the reason my business is not built on my story. I've done one episode of this podcast, which is my story. And that's because I was like, you know, there's nothing remarkable about my life, but I've got enough sort of, you know, 70 to 90% skill sets that put them all together and I can help a few people, right? But maybe the better question to ask with people like us is instead of what do you want to do? Because ask me what on a different day. I want to do something different all the time. I want to go-kart on Wednesdays and I want to play a gig on Saturdays and, you know, and play footy on Sundays, whatever it is. But what would you be most proud of doing once you have done it?
Oh, that's a cracking question.
I think that lands a little differently. So yeah, so asking yourself or even asking people that you're mentoring or supporting or friends, but if you're confused, what would you be most proud of doing once you've done it? And you could even say whilst doing it, because you want it to be fulfilling whilst you're doing it, right? And maybe we don't know the answer to that, but I suspect the list of options that would present itself is far shorter than the skill set that we've got.
Yeah, that's an awesome reflection question. Make sure you write that down somewhere, folks, whoever's listening to this. And
Maddie's not ruining everything today, so that's nice.
Yeah, that's a change. And I think, like, with multi-dynamic and multifaceted skill sets, I think it can be quite confusing and quite paralyzing because we get the decision paralysis. You know, I was sharing with Maddie earlier that we were getting the power cut off at our house today, and I was cracking on about how ridiculously inconvenient it was because I've got 3 podcast interviews today and I've been planning this for weeks and all of the things. And then I'm like, hang on a second, Lisa, you're really, really highlighting the fact that you're a very privileged, very first world citizen right now. Pull your head out of your bum. How grateful are we that we have access to incredible people that will put you up in their studio, that we have access to power in the first place, that I could get everything done in my house and my washing done before it got cut off, like all of that type of stuff. And I think the same can be true with when we have so many options, whether that be because we are living in a privileged part of the world, or whether that be because we do have the privilege of being multi-skilled or multifaceted, and we get that paralysis, that decision paralysis or decision fatigue, or I know I never used to be able to go and shop in David Jones or Meijer because I'm like, there is just so many options here. I can't make a decision. Hold up 2 dresses and I'll choose one. Like, I don't want to see 700 things. I just can't. Then we risk doing nothing. And so then when we have so much value that we can give to the world, it becomes a real shame when we don't add any of it because we're like deer in the headlights, this is a lot and this is too much. And so this is something, and again, I sound really privileged to have this problem, and I've judged myself super hard for this for a long time, but nevertheless, this is my experience and this is my season right now. And the thing that I've done to help myself in that space, and I'm not sure if this is going to help anybody else, but is really look for the golden thread that goes through everything that I'm doing. So whether I'm having this chat with you today, whether I'm going to be helping people in the gym later, whether I'm going to be working with farmers and rural communities tomorrow, whether I'm going to be, you know, helping out with my partner's kids next week, whether I'm going to be helping mum and dad on the farm, whether I'm going to be chatting to a glass company in Canada, get their culture and their leadership situation sorted. What's the golden thread that I'm doing in all of that? And I think it's just, for me, it's just getting around good people doing good work in the world. Like, And then it's going, oh, well, then how can we package that, you know? And this whole safe movement piece that I'm working on at the moment, whereby SAFE stands for simple, accessible, functional and effective, and we can talk about that a bit in a moment if you like, that can apply not only to movement, but that can apply to life and to making decisions and to positioning ourselves, you know, at work or at home or in sport. Like, how can we actually apply all these things? And suddenly it's not necessarily, oh, well, I have to do this one thing with these one people because I'm a personal trainer, fitness professional. It's, oh, what a really cool blueprint and what a really cool golden thread that can be applied to all aspects of life, because life isn't compartmentalized. I really don't think that there's such thing as work-life balance now. I think it's very much more around work-life integration, because I don't know about you, Maddie. I don't switch off at 5 o'clock and not think about work until 8:30 the next day.
Yeah, no, same. And it's where a lot of us derive our purpose. So the idea that we should balance it with disconnection doesn't always make sense to me.
No, that's right. And I always used to get caught up in, you know, find something you love and never work a day in your life. And I'm like, that doesn't always work for me, because the second I have to do something or I need to, then I have a rebellion against that straight away. I know I have a really strong rebellious archetype, so I have to be aware of that. But I think as well, it's got a little bit to do with something super profound that I was about to say and absolutely has escaped my brain through all of the holes in my head.
I wanted to say that, firstly, I really appreciate your acknowledgement of this sounding like a privileged conversation. And it's like, there might be some people listening that roll their eyes and they're like, oh, these poor privileged Australians.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, I would say that this is literally destabilizing a generation. And huge. It's possibly going to be worse for Gen Z. It's possibly going to be worse for Gen Alpha. And sure, it's a privilege problem, but just because people have privilege doesn't mean they don't have problems. They just have different problems. Mm. And often the big traumas that people have that you mentioned earlier that you and I maybe don't have, they are the driving force which give those people clarity. Mm. And we joked on the phone last night when we were chatting about we were waiting for our horrific trauma to happen so we could finally understand our purpose in life, because it, you know, whether you're in a third world country or whether you've been the victim of something terrifyingly awful, it usually comes with a whole dose of clarity at some point in the future. And that's kind of, you know, what I think a lot of, you know, millennials and Gen Z, and then there's probably lots of people in different generations with the internet and the wealth of these countries, you know, a lot of those people probably experience this. But yes, privileged conversation, but equally it's possibly the downfall of the privileged generation and countries, because they've got generations of people that don't know what the fuck to do with it.
And it's like having the cure to cancer, right? All good and well. If you don't know what to do with it, what's the point? If you can have all of these options, but if you don't actually know how you fit into those or how they fit in and around you, because quite possibly now with all of the wealth of information that we have available to us, I know I've certainly lost myself in that, going, oh, well, I actually don't know who I am or where I fit in the web of the universe anymore, because I've got all of this external noise telling me who I should be and how I should show up and what's going on and who and this and that and you should this and join my program and how does this go. That not only do we have so many privileged choices, I actually don't know who I am in the middle of that, says a lot of people that I've spoken to of all sorts of generations, because it's coming at us, and we do have that does become a challenge. It really is. And I saw something on Instagram, which is like the go-to online psychology site these days. and it said you can do everything. Oh, no, sorry. No, it said you can do anything. You can do anything. It's 2024 when we're recording this. We absolutely, for the most part, people like you and I, Maddie, and anyone that's listening, we can do anything. We can. We can. It hasn't always been like that, but we can do anything. But we can't do everything. And I went through this whole identity crisis around the fact that I don't have huge trauma and I don't have huge poverty or any links or relation to something terrible that has happened in my life. And so then therefore I am not worthy I am not worthy to have these problems. I am not worthy to have an emotion that's less than joy. I'm not worthy to even go out on a limb and have people think that they should talk to me or that they would even listen to me or buy my program because I'm not worthy. But let me tell you, Maddie, that sitting here in a little I'm not worthy to do something good in the world pit isn't helping the people in poverty, and it's not helping feed more starving children in Africa. So we can sit here and be like, oh my God, I'm so privileged and I feel so guilty about it. But how can we shift that guilt into gratitude so that we can actually do something, not everything, but something that might actually come back around and serve to give purpose to those people's pain who don't have a choice, but we do.
Absolutely. And I really like that idea of you can do anything, but you can't have everything. Mm. It's like, it's all possible, but you're living one life, right? Mm. And there's another iteration of that, which is you can have everything, but not all at once. And I really like that as well, because it gives context to the fact that things take time and that some things come at the sacrifice of another thing, right? And I think this, despite the fact that, you know, we've gone on sort of this tangent that I really like because I relate to it all, I think it relates perfectly to the whole conversation around movement, because we see so many people sedentary, not moving because of the privilege of having too many gyms to choose from and too many modalities of health to choose from. And they're totally floored by, I kind of didn't like this gym, the vibe was off. And then that trainer was a little bit like this. And it's again, it's the privilege of choice again.
Huge. And I know for me, I can be very lazy when all of the ducks are lined up, when my body's good, when my mindset's good, when I'm not traveling for work, when I actually can go to the gym when I want to. I'm like, oh, nah, I won't. But the second I get injured, the second that I have to go away for work, or the second there's COVID and they shut my gym down and I can't go there, motherfucker, I wanted to go and do that. It's like taking a toy away from a kid when they weren't playing with it. Mate, I am a 37-year-old child. I am a giant child, and I feel like we kind of all are in a certain way. And you take something away and you watch me do it. You're like, I will be doing bloody running up and down someone's driveway on a station out in Western Queensland if I'm there for a delivery for work. I'm doing push-ups on their fence. I'm hurdling their barbed wire fence. If something's really difficult to suddenly do, then it's like, oh, well, fine, I'll sure show you. And it becomes a point-proving contest, which is amazing because now we get a workout. But so much of what you just said is like when we have all of these abilities and our access is super, super open, sometimes it's now a little bit too easy and too available. And so we take it for granted. I've seen it in relationships as well. When people are so and too accessible to other people, they get taken for granted. Like, I'm not saying be a closed book and never talk to anyone and ghost people and don't reply to them and treat them mean, keep them keen. Absolutely not. But I think it just goes to show like human nature is really interesting in that sense. And I know I'm absolutely guilty of that for sure.
Yeah. No, and I think, you know, the take home lesson for me out of this conversation is to give myself less choice, right? And that's one of the reasons, and I've talked about it many times, that I, for the most part, don't have the social media apps on my phone because I'm giving myself less choice, because otherwise I am hyper susceptible to the doom scroll. Like I get angry at myself, but do I say, hey, just put the phone down? No, I have to delete the app or use an app blocker, you know? And so in the same vein with the health and fitness, it's like, what is in walking distance? That's what I'm limiting my options to.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I live in a rural and remote town in Queensland, and it's amazing because everything is 2.5 minutes because there's not a lot. And so you have to take with what you've got. Whereas when I was visiting with my friends and my parents in the last couple of weeks, and I had to drive 25 minutes at 4:30 in the morning to go to the gym with my friend, I'm like, ew, like 25-minute drive. I don't think so. Like I want things to be in 5 seconds, thanks. And I think removing, like there's that fine line between removing barriers to entry, but also like that choice piece is massive, Maddie. And I've had a personal realization in the last couple of weeks actually, which has been massive around I reflect on a time in my life and I romanticize it. so much. I'm like, oh, my life was so much better when I loved it, when these were all of the conditions and blah, 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 blah. And I go, oh, I just need to recreate that in my life. But that's not the season of my life that I'm in. And I romanticize on what it was 5 years ago. It would be completely different if I went and put myself into that space now. But I'm like, well, what was it about that? We should be able to recreate those feelings wherever we are. We shouldn't have to go and rely on a place or a situation or a person or a circumstance in order to elicit a feeling in us. Like, yes, we are humans and I am very susceptible and responsive to my environment. That's a really important thing for me as well. But I had this massive light bulb moment the other day, Maddie, where I was like, you know what? That was in the middle of COVID. That was when I was in WA behind the Great Wall of China, WA, Mexico, where we couldn't even go out if we wanted to for a long time. Now, I'm not being insensitive to the likes of yourself and anyone else that was in Victoria, Australia at that time, the most locked down city in the whole freaking world. Like, being locked down in Perth was a pretty great place to be locked down. And I was within walking distance of the beach and all of these amazing things. And so it was really, really nice. But what I realized in that was that I had no choice. I had to keep my job because there was so much uncertainty. I had to stay where I was living. I had no choice because I was single for the first time in 10 years and I wasn't on a huge wage. So I had to keep my job. I had to stay where I was living in my dungeon apartment. I had to make the best of what I had in Perth because there was no running home to mummy and daddy and all of my friends in Brisbane. I had to make the best of what I had. And I just had to deal with this tiny little 5 kilometer radius of life. I couldn't go to the gym. I had to go for a run. I had to go between 6 and 7 because that was allotment. And so suddenly, when all of my choice was taken away and I just had to show up and do the thing, the quality of my life improved exponentially because I wasn't whittling it away and I wasn't leaking my energy and my potency with overthinking, wondering if I'm making the right decision and getting choice paralysis because there was no decision. And so this is where I think having really solid frameworks and boundaries and knowing your values and what your purpose and what your personal vision and mission is for the world to actually keep you not even so much on the straight and narrow, but when you know what your framework is, you can freestyle within that then. You can go to the edges of what you have constructed for your life and be more potent and have even more impact in the world because you know what that is for you. And I think there is so much value in dropping off the amount of choices that you have in your life and just making the best of what you've got for sure. Like, look at people in poverty. I don't know if anyone's been to Asia lately. They don't have a choice. They just have to show up and live that way. And they're some of the happiest people I've ever seen. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I think as well, like, we can all, there are tools at our disposal and technologies at our disposal. And sure, we shouldn't need them. We should be stronger, blah, blah, blah. But just accept the reality. You're a machine that was designed to be addicted to dopamine because once upon a time, food was scarce, procreation was scarce, and you needed that dopamine. And the corporations and sugar companies and porn companies and whatever have hacked that system. Admit it, accept it, now play the same game so that you can actually have a hope at winning, which is use the technology, use the devices, tell yourself you're not weak, accept that you're just a human, that's okay, and leverage some of those things to be able to reduce your options, reduce your distraction, allow you to focus, allow you to forget that, you know, there are 400 other men or women on social media. And and what I mean by that is, you know, are those a threat to your relationship? There's a lawyer in New York that is due to come on the podcast, but he always refers to Instagram as an infidelity producing machine, right? So, you know, whether it be your relationship that's in danger of being dilute or damaged, you know, delete your apps. Is it your work? For me, it's my work. It's my work that's in danger of being dilute. And, you know, I'm in a position where about to start a little family, right? So it's like, I don't need those distractions. I need to be focused on producing income. So yeah, it's okay to be quote unquote weak and need these devices and resources and stuff like that. I say, you play the game that we're in. Otherwise, you inevitably lose anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we've been ranting about all sorts of things. And I'm hoping that, you know, every millennial feels seen and heard and everybody else that relates to this conversation. But to wrap it all up in a nice little bow and make it look adorable for everybody, Anyone that might be wanting help or support with movement, with advice for how they move their body, how they navigate injuries, how they choose the physical modality they might move towards, you know, whether it's lifting weights or it's cardio or it's Pilates, all of that stuff, how do they find Lisa to hang out with you and talk to you and get your advice?
Amazing. Well, back to our unremarkable chat that we kind of floated in there as well. I don't have any type of remarkable Facebook or Instagram or website at all. I'm quite inconsistent on posting because, you know, that's what I should be doing. And I very much rebel about the things that I should be doing, but it doesn't change the fact that I have a heart to help people. And I'm all about getting around people doing good work in the world. And one of the best things that you can do is help yourself be fitter, healthier, and stronger for a lifetime. In whatever season you're in. And so I think Instagram is probably the best place to find me at the moment. My handle is at Lisa U Ferg, the letter U Ferg, F-E-R-G. Maddie will put that in the show notes. And jump on in there. I love a good voice message. Pop me a voice message if you're courageous enough to record yourself. I can give you a top tip about that. Don't ever listen to it back. Just hit send. And I'd love to chat. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, beautiful. And as you said, yep, they'll be down in the caption or the show notes below. And what is one piece of health information that you wish more people knew about?
The one piece of health information that I wish more people knew about would be that you will never know which program, which fitness professional, which Instagram influencer is going to work for you until you know yourself. Unless you know yourself innately and you've done that work to know who you are and what makes you tick and what pisses you right off and what triggers you and what drives you to rebel against things. Until you know those things about you and you're courageous enough to lean in and do that brave work, you will never know which program is going to be the best one for you. And the risk of not knowing those things is another 10, another 20 years, another $10,000 or $20,000 investing into things that still aren't working, that still aren't sticking, and potentially another 10 or 20 kilos or more, or a bunch of injuries that don't need to be there.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Thanks for hanging out here, Lisa. I appreciate you. This is a great conversation. I know we're going to get you back because clearly we can vibe and speak pretty easily as we've done it a lot in the past. But thank you, and we'll catch you soon.
Thanks. I hope this has been helpful. Have a great day.
Bye. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.